Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we are opening a file that, well, it belongs less on a historical record shelf and more in the deepest vault you can imagine. The one labeled High Consequence Denial. This story is so sensational, so profoundly contradictory, that the official history books decided the only way to manage it was to just pretend it never happened at all.
It's the ultimate example of state-sanctioned gaslighting, isn't it?
It really is.
When a history is scrubbed with this level of precision, I mean, a history involving a localized existential threat, it tells you that the event wasn't just dangerous. It was ideologically destabilizing.
Right.
They weren't just covering up a mistake. They were trying to prevent the public from understanding the true, terrifying link between immense genius and an absolute psychological fragility.
So our goal today is to synthesize the shocking file on building a trajectory that begins with pure scientific genius, a mind celebrated as a national resource.
Ends with a black hole.
And ends with a black hole forming high above a little place called Concrete City, Delaware. We are diving into a story where the line between boy wonder and world ender just completely collapsed.
Well, the central contradiction is the gravitational pull of this story.
Yeah.
This was a mind building recognized at the highest levels.
Yeah.
The kind of prodigy whose destiny was supposed to be the betterment of humanity.
Mm.
Yet his final fully realized project was a mechanism for global destruction, fueled by the most mundane human catalyst imaginable.
A broken heart.
A broken heart. It is the perfect tragic narrative of potential being fatally misdirected.
And the sources, they immediately signal that we are dealing with an anomaly. The very first record we have of building, allegedly born in Concrete City, Delaware, lists a birth date that physically cannot exist.
February 30th, 1955.
February 30th.
That impossible detail. I mean, it's a brilliant narrative anchor right from the start, isn't it? A birth date on a day that only appears in fiction, never in reality. It suggests that this person, Bill Ding, was always operating outside the established boundaries of the world. It's a subtle warning sign, confirming that the individual we're talking about was never going to fit neatly into the conventional, you know, chronological flow of history.
It's a perfect foreshadowing. The fact that someone so celebrated, a national asset, could pivot so entirely from a trajectory of pure discovery to one of total annihilation and then have his entire existence wiped from every official database. It's just astounding.
Well, the emotional pressure placed upon a recognized prodigy is immense. Their identity is predicated entirely on their superior intellect and their ability to command the physical world.
Sure.
So when that foundation is shaken by something as messy and irrational as human emotion, the capacity for destruction often scales up to match their capacity for creation.
Okay, let's unpack this. The genius who becomes the villain. The one-line takeaway we're going to be wrestling with today is, well, it's grimly poetic. Sometimes the line between boy genius and supervillain origin story is just one betrayal. Let's start the clock in Act One, the genesis of genius.
Mm.
So let's set the scene. Concrete City, Delaware.
Mm.
You might think a place named Concrete City implies rigidity, permanence, a kind of functional, maybe even dull stability.
And that stability was Bill Ding's environment. He thrived within its constraints.
He really did. The sources paint a very clear, if intimidating, picture of his early life. He wasn't just smart in school.
No, not at all. He was an intellectual force of nature. He was relentlessly dominant, specifically in science and engineering.
And that anecdote that he dominated every science fair he entered, leaving competitors in the dust, that speaks volumes.
Well, absolutely.
That detail is so crucial because it employs a pattern of behavior and thought. He wasn't interested in participation trophies or, you know, close calls. Science for Bill Bing wasn't about curiosity. It was a zero-sum game of intellectual superiority. He systematically mastered the rules of the natural world and used that mastery to obliterate the competition.
And just imagine the psychological cost of that environment for him and for his peers.
Right.
He never had to learn compromise or collaboration in the intellectual sphere. He was the undisputed monarch. Every year, Bill Ding reaffirmed that he was fundamentally separate from and superior to the normal intellect.
So it reinforces this absolute belief in his own power.
Exactly. The belief that if a system is logical, he can control it.
And this trajectory, it peaks in 1972. This is the undeniable proof of his status. As a teenager, he would have been, what, 16 or 17, given that impossible 1955 birth date?
Mm-hmm.
He earns the title of National Inventor of the Year.
Which is not a local prize. This is a massive national achievement.
Sure.
And that title, it just shifts everything. It moves him from being a local curiosity to a national resource. Earning National Inventor of the Year in the early 70s placed a staggering burden of expectation on him. It wasn't just validation of his past work. It was a promissory note on his future.
A promise to who?
To everyone. The establishment universities, military contractors, government agencies, they all confirmed that Bill Ding was destined to do something huge with his life.
So that genius identity is now fully locked in. He is the brilliant, logical problem solver who can calculate every single variable. This entire ecosystem reinforces the idea that precision, intellectual rigor, and control are the sole metrics of his worth and stability.
And this is where we need to press pause on the psychology of it.
Okay.
A life built entirely on the measurable, the controllable, and the predictable is inherently brittle. He has invested all of his internal capital into the rational world.
So any external force that's irrational,
any form of chaos,
becomes an existential threat to his sense of self.
Precisely. We often speculate about the social isolation of prodigies, right?
Sure, the lonely genius trope.
Yeah, but think about it. If your worth is only measured by your ability to win science fairs, you likely bypass the crucial developmental stages of learning to manage failure or navigate complex social dynamics or
deal with rejection.
Absolutely. The emotional education is deferred or entirely ignored because the rewards for scientific discipline are so immediately gratifying and so highly publicized.
The expectations are simple. Keep succeeding, keep inventing.
And the complexities of human interaction must seem messy, illogical, and frankly, beneath his focus. This lack of emotional grounding creates an immense vulnerability.
So we as a society, we anticipate a Nobel Prize, or maybe the invention of sustainable fusion power. We anticipate advancement.
Right.
But when that pressurized identity, this life built on control, suddenly encounters a profound loss of control,
the immense capacity for creation instantly flips
into a capacity for destruction.
Yes. The very same focus that won him National Inventor of the Year is the intense focus required for catastrophic revenge.
And the source material just positions him perfectly for this. A scientifically flawless individual residing in a metaphorically rigid place, concrete city.
Everything's aligned for a trajectory of controlled greatness. He is set up for a crash of world-altering magnitude.
Which brings us to Act Two. This is the emotional event that becomes the nuclear trigger for the entire ensuing disaster. His life hits a very conventional social apex during his senior year of high school.
After years of what we can only assume was a kind of intellectual monasticism, the sources state that Bill Ding fell completely in love with a girl named Holiday.
And this isn't just a casual romance.
Oh, no. This is a tectonic shift for a person who previously only interacted with the world through equations.
And the description of Holiday is so telling. She is called his anchor.
His anchor.
Think about what that means for a mind that is operating at a level so far above everyone else. A mind perhaps floating free in the abstractness of theoretical physics.
An anchor is grounding.
It's grounding. She was the first person who made him feel truly human, not just a walking scientific anomaly. She represented the variable that finally brought balance to his intensely unbalanced life.
For a mind like his, the commitment to Holiday wouldn't have been casual at all. It would have been total analyzed and integrated into his entire future calculus.
He planned for it.
He absolutely did. She was a variable of stability he had calculated into his destiny. If he was going to do something huge with his life, she was the constant that made that success meaningful.
But the calculation went horribly, tragically wrong. The discovery that shattered him occurred right before graduation. That detail just adds a layer of absolute cruelty to the timing.
It's brutal.
Holiday was cheating on him with his unnamed best friend.
The timing is so critical. Graduation is the precise moment he was supposed to take his validated genius identity and step into his grand future.
Right, the launch pad.
And the betrayal didn't just break his heart. It invalidated his entire vision of the future at the moment of highest expectation. It was emotional sabotage timed perfectly to destroy his professional launch.
So this is where we need to stop calling it a breakup. For Bill Ding, this was a systems failure of the highest order.
Exactly.
He believed in predictable outcomes based on inputs. He put in commitment, let's call it X, and he expected loyalty and love, Y.
But the output was betrayal, Z.
An impossible variable. It completely destroyed his faith in the governing principles of reality.
That is the core of the psychological rupture. Betrayal is the ultimate anti-logic. It's irrational, it's chaotic, and it's fundamentally uncontrollable by intellectual means.
And it proved that his superior mind, his greatest tool for navigating the world, was utterly useless against the random malice or apathy of human nature.
So in that moment, the scientist in him must have concluded that science was inadequate to deal with reality.
The tools failed.
All the tools that brought him national fame logic, precision, analysis, they failed to solve his most fundamental human problem.
So if the world is fundamentally chaotic and unpredictable,
why bother adhering to its rules?
The world of rules just vanished. His control was stripped away.
And for someone whose entire self-worth was predicated on having that control, the loss of it mandated a reaction of equal or greater destructive force.
He needed to prove something.
He needed to prove, using the tools of his genius, that nothing in this chaotic world deserved to exist.
Here's where it gets really interesting. This singular, agonizing personal breakdown, a classic, painful teenage heartbreak, becomes the psychological spark for a global threat.
It's the ultimate escalation of private pain into public danger.
And his immediate reaction wasn't, you know, conventional emotional lashing out. He didn't stay to fight or argue.
No, the source material is very clear. He disappeared from Concrete City without a word shortly after the discovery.
The genius identity, the celebrated future, all of it ended abruptly. A complete vanishing act.
The terror of that silence is profound. He didn't dissipate the pain.
He weaponized it.
Yes. That 14-year gap that follows, the silence of the prodigy, suggests the heartbreak didn't heal. It calcified. It marinated in his superior intellect, turning into a perfectly synthesized, lethal bitterness.
He took what to him was the logical course of action for a mind overwhelmed by chaos.
Withdrawal, deep reflection, and meticulous reorganization.
And we can only assume he spent those years using his gifts, not for the benefit of humanity, but to craft a controlled, final counterstrike against the specific kind of chaos that destroyed his equilibrium.
He didn't just walk away from Concrete City. He walked away from the entire promise of his life. And that withdrawal gave him 14 years to design the ultimate physical solution to the problem of a messy, unpredictable world.
Okay, so now we hit this vast silence. From a devastated high school senior in, what, 1973, we leap to a reappearance in 1986.
That 14-year silence, that's the genesis period of the supervillain.
Absolutely. We have zero official records of his movements, his funding, or his emotional development.
And that absence of information is itself a data point, isn't it?
How so?
Well, how does a National Inventor of the Year, who is being tracked by government agencies and universities, simply vanish for 14 years without a trace?
Right. Someone should have been watching him.
It suggests one of two things. Either he was so distraught that he lived completely off-grid, using his genius to avoid detection,
okay.
Or, and this is perhaps more chilling, he was engaged in highly sensitive, secretive work that was compartmentalized even from the official records we can typically access.
So if he was selling his genius, it must have been to the highest bidder in the shadows.
Mm.
Maybe specialized clandestine military contracts for advanced propulsion or energy generation, something like that.
And that's really the only way to explain the next step.
Yeah.
The funding. How do you go from a vanished teenager to purchasing a skyscraper in 1986?
You can't. Not without a lot of money.
Precisely. We have to assume he acquired immense, untraceable wealth. He weaponized his intellect commercially, but always in the shadows, always maintaining absolute secrecy. The money he earned was just a tool to buy back his control and execute his long-planned vengeance.
And when he returns to Concrete City in 86, he doesn't announce himself with a press conference or, you know, a charitable foundation.
No.
He announces himself with an architectural assertion of power. He buys an entire skyscraper.
The choice of a skyscraper is just loaded with symbolism. It's a literal monument to vertical ambition and separation.
Right.
He places himself physically above the city that had celebrated him, and more importantly, above the very ground where he was betrayed. It signifies his superior status and his isolation from human concerns.
He is no longer walking among the people.
He's observing them from an impenetrable height.
And he immediately transforms the top floors into a private secret laboratory. This isn't the romantic idea of a scientist scale.
No, this is an industrial scale high security fortress. This is peak 1980s supervillain energy.
It totally is. And the local rumors, they corroborate this change in identity.
Yeah.
The sources mention the local gossip.
Strange deliveries.
Suggesting heavy equipment and exotic materials.
Late night lights, indicating relentless obsessive work cycles.
And odd sounds coming from the high floors, implying complex mechanical processes far beyond simple office work.
So he used the very systems he understood, finance and real estate, to buy the shell and then his superior engineering to fill it with dread.
The town knows something is wrong, but they probably just rationalize it as eccentric billionaire behavior.
And the most dangerous operations are often those shielded by simple wealth and isolation.
And the result of those 2 years of intense isolated work is revealed in 1988. The masterpiece is finally unveiled.
A black hole generating machine mounted high above the city, likely integrated into the upper structure of the skyscraper itself. This is the physical culmination of 14 years of intellectualized bitterness.
We have to dedicate some time to the weapon choice because this is the core psychological manifestation. Why a black hole?
Right.
He's a physics genius. He knows exactly what a singularity implies.
A black hole is the antithesis of everything Bill Ding once stood for. He was the master of logic, prediction, order.
And a black hole is?
It's the cosmic realization of absolute chaos. It is a singularity where all known laws of physics, all rules, all systems, all logic cease to function.
Nothing that enters a black hole can be retrieved, identified, or even explained.
It perfectly mirrors the emptiness and the destructive chaos he felt when Holiday betrayed him. She introduced chaos into his controlled life.
So he responded by introducing absolute, inescapable chaos into the world.
Its emotional projection scaled up to an apocalyptic level. If betrayal proved that meaning and control were illusions, then the logical conclusion for a genius of his caliber is to ensure that literally nothing matters by consuming all matter.
Wow.
He wasn't aiming for a simple controllable bomb. He was aiming for fundamental reality failure, the destruction of space, time, and matter itself, starting right above the city that witnessed his rise and his fall.
And we have to imagine the engineering challenge of creating a contained functional black hole generator in the late 1980s.
Staggering.
We don't have the schematics. But the sheer power required must have been unbelievable. Massive capacitors, exotic materials shielding, maybe tapping into the city's power grid.
Causing brownouts just to run initial diagnostics.
Right. The machine must have been immense, a frightening testament to a singular focus. It wasn't built to be subtle.
No, it was built to succeed at the cost of reality. The 1988 unveiling marks the moment Bill Ding achieves his final form. The reclusive mad scientist, whose power is directly proportional to his personal pain, finally ready to unleash his vengeance on the world that allowed him to be hurt.
And so the final act begins. The police and authorities are scrambling, maybe responding to frantic energy reports or structural alarms from the skyscraper, but the primary sequence is already underway.
The activation begins with visual horror.
Yeah.
As the machine powers up, the sources describe an immediate and terrifying visible effect. A dark void begins to form in the air above Concrete City.
This isn't a theoretical threat anymore. This is visibly tearing a hole in the fabric of reality.
The noise, the energy discharge, the sudden unnatural darkness, it must have been utter pandemonium on the streets below.
And before the void grows too large, before the forces become entirely irresistible, Bill Ding makes his final public appearance.
He needs to have the last word.
He needs the world, and most critically, he needs Holiday to know the precise personal etiology of this disaster.
So he steps onto the balcony, likely fighting the rapidly escalating winds and gravitational effects. He's wired massive, powerful speakers across Concrete City.
This is his final broadcast, his definitive act of communication, overwhelming local media and radio signals to ensure maximum coverage.
And the quote, delivered with all the bitterness that 14 years of silence had refined, it is chilling in its specificity and its total self-centered worldview.
Holiday, if you're out there, this is your fault.
We have to analyze the profound, horrific magnitude of that statement.
It's unbelievable.
He is actively in the process of generating a cosmic singularity that will consume existence, yet his final words are purely focused on blaming one person for one act of teenage betrayal.
It completely reframes the scale of the apocalypse. This isn't about world domination, ideology, or power.
No, it's the ultimate act of weaponized passive aggression.
That's a great way to put it.
He intends to end the world, but he needs the record to show that she broke his heart first and that her action was the singular, justifiable cause for universal deletion.
The genius has been reduced to a heartbroken teenager seeking the ultimate, undeniable validation of his pain.
It shows that even at his most powerful, most technologically advanced, his motivations remained rooted in that single traumatic moment right before graduation. The intellect was merely the delivery system for the emotional wound.
And then comes the profound irony. The chaos he sought to unleash was immediately indiscriminate. The sources state that the black hole's pull intensified rapidly, and Bill Ding, in his focus on the broadcast, got too close.
His own invention drags him into the void, and he vanishes, never to be seen again.
The system consumed its creator.
Exactly. The man who sought to control chaos was himself consumed by the ultimate chaos he generated. His vengeance machine delivered swift, personalized justice only to its inventor.
It's a chilling reminder that ultimate power, once unleashed, rarely respects the wishes of its master.
But the threat didn't vanish with him, did it?
Not at all. The chaos was now threatening Concrete City itself, the gravity of the singularity expanding. And this is where the ordinary people step in. The police officers, fighting against the laws of physics.
They breach the lab, fighting the machine's pull as equipment rattles and tears around them.
This is just pure, raw, conventional heroism in the face of existential horror. We often romanticize stopping a doomsday device with, you know, complex counter-schematics or a philosophical debate.
Right, the hero has to outsmart the villain.
But here, the crisis was averted by simple, desperate bravery.
And the critical action stressed in the sources is almost laughably mundane, yet unbelievably brave.
They managed to physically unplug and shut down the device.
They unplugged it.
They found the main power source, maybe a giant cord or a master switch, and severed the connection.
Physically unplugging a black hole generator. That grounding detail is fascinating. It suggests that despite its world-ending capability, the machine was still an analog piece of 1980s technology, beholden to the fundamentals of electricity.
And they stopped the catastrophic damage. They halted the black hole before reality tears any further. Concrete City survived by a thread.
All due to the quick thinking and sheer strength of ordinary officers.
The near miss was absolute. The police intervention was literally the only thing standing between a local disaster and a global extinction event, if they had been minutes slower.
The scale of the destruction would have been irreversible.
And this brings us to the final critical phase of the operation.
The erasure.
Bill Ding vanished into the void, and his legacy was immediately targeted. His name vanishes from most official records.
The National Inventor of the Year archives, school records, university applications.
All scrubbed. He exists only in local whispers, only as the kid genius whose broken heart almost destroyed everything.
And this is where we need to define what erasure means. It wasn't just a lapse in record keeping.
No.
The government, or the shadow agencies responsible for managing national security crises, made the cold, rational decision that the existence of a functional black hole machine created by a jilted former prodigy was too destabilizing for public consumption.
They chose denial over transparency.
Systematic denial. The erasure process would have been a massive disinformation campaign, not just deleting digital files, but actively retrieving physical documentation, microfilm, high school yearbooks, science fair trophies.
That impossible birth date, February 30th, probably made the initial deletion simple.
But the subsequent cover-up required coordination at the highest levels.
So why the intense effort?
Because confirming that a black hole machine could be built by one man, driven by personal grievance, fundamentally undermines the public's sense of safety and control. It proves that technological advancement is not inherently benevolent.
and that true catastrophic threats can arise from deeply personal, non-ideological sources.
So they chose to maintain psychological stability for the public by turning a historic near-apocalypse into a ghost story.
And so, the prodigious inventor who dominated science fairs and peaked the black hole machine became history's great absence.
No.
So we've synthesized this absolutely extraordinary journey. From a science fair prodigy born on an impossible date, celebrated as National Inventor of the Year, to a reclusive mad scientist operating out of a concrete city skyscraper. The core lesson here is that the central conflict was never about science, but about the devastation caused by personal betrayal when it's weaponized by a limitless intellect.
So what does this all mean? It means the true dividing line for people operating at this level of intellectual capacity isn't academic success or professional funding.
Yeah.
It's emotional stability. Building's life proves that a mind capable of mastering physics is not inherently capable of mastering pain or accepting failure. The power of his genius, once dedicated to solving problems, was lethally weaponized against the world when his own life became emotionally unsolvable.
Which brings us back to our takeaway, made infinitely more relevant by the sheer scale of the event. Sometimes the line between boy genius and supervillain origin story is just one betrayal.
It's terrifying precisely because the catalyst for near global destruction was something so tragically mundane, so universally relatable.
And let's reflect on the lasting implication of it all. The erasure. Bill Ding is now an erased story, a file that exists only in the shadows.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture of other erased histories, like the story of the soldier Klaus Richter we've talked about, we realize something crucial.
What's that?
The intensity and the perfection of the cover-up itself becomes the final enduring evidence of the scale of the event.
That's a fantastic point. They wouldn't mobilize the resources to scrub a simple failure.
Never. They only erase events that fundamentally challenge our understanding of reality and the limits of human capability and emotional volatility. The impossible birth date, the denial of the black hole machine, the cover-up confirms the sheer world-ending chaos that occurred.
So this raises an important question for you, the listener. What is the national security risk posed by isolated genius lacking an emotional education?
And what other forgotten disasters, sparked by motives as simple as heartbreak or misplaced obsession, are lurking just beneath the surface of official history?
What else was unplugged just in time?
And what might happen when the next emotional system fails at that level of power?
For a full breakdown of the Bill Ding file and more erased stories like his, make sure you check out Ad Inspector Story. We'll see you next time for the next deep dive.